You are listening to The Ron Van Dam Show. That's one part blah, 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 one part ha, 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 and just a smidgen of ta-da!
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's The Ron Van Dam Show.
All right.
Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird if you like that sort of thing.
Welcome to the program. It is indeed the Ron Van Dam Show. I am one of the two people that I've mentioned, even though I only mentioned one, so I am actually Ron Van Dam. Thank you so much. Please sit down. The standing ovation is embarrassing for me. Please sit down. What day of the week is this? Quick. Sunday. Yes, that's... No, it's not Sunday. Oh, come on. Get a life. At least know what day it is. Because I don't. I have no idea. All the days sound the same, look the same, same things happen. It's just become really... Boy, when I was a young man, an older teenager, when I was like 18, 19, 20, 21, all those kind of ages, a lot was happening. I was dating and moving and I was going from one thing to another. I was multitasking. I had so many tasks going on. It was unbelievable. I would get up, go to work, have a date, go home, get up, go stays, go so. I'd develop my thing, I'd start a business, I'd eat with Sarah, I'd have fish for dinner, I did so many things, I'd shower and brush my teeth even. I was so active, I was wearing active wear, which proves that I was active. I was walking and moving and grooving and going places and meeting people. I had schedules and appointments, and oh my God, I was so busy. Now, what do you want to do? I don't know. What do you want to do? I don't know. Probably nothing. Yeah, that sounds good to me. What do you want for dinner? I don't know. What do you want for dinner? I don't know. What do you want for dinner? I don't know. I'm running out of ideas to eat things. I know. What do you want to do later? Same thing I'm doing now. Can you get up and get me that thing? I don't want to stand up anymore. It's been terrible. It's even an effort to drink water. Can you get me a glass of water? No, I'll get it myself. Wait a minute, there's nobody else here. Who am I talking to? I don't know. I don't want water anyway. Hydration, that's just a thing. That's a deep state kind of conspiracy. Drinking water, yeah, right, sure. Come on, get out of here with that idea. Boy, what happened to me? More importantly, what happened to you? Look at you. Look at you. Just look at yourself. Go to the bathroom, look in the mirror, and get some real stuff going on. Look at you. Botox, that's not helping anymore. Remember when Botox, they used to inject it into your ass or your face or your forehead or something, and you look great? Like for a long time. Now you get a Botox injection in your forehead and it's good for like 10 minutes. There's no wrinkles in my face. And it's been 15 minutes now. Come on. Either you're emaciated or you need to have the fat sucked out of you. One or the other, there's no in between. All the television commercials are about diseases and medications. Every single one of them. Or insurance companies telling you it's not a question if something happens that's horrible, it's when it happens. Oh my God, shut up. No more happy commercials? No? The only happy commercials I see are for new cars, where if you drive this car, it will be the thrill of your life. Other than that, sorry, we got nothing for you. We'll show you all the diseases and all the things that can happen if you take the medication for the diseases, and the side effects are worse than the disease you had in the first place. Now back to our comedy show. Oh, come on, stop it. Stop it. Have you ever been to a TED Talks before? I never have, because I don't want to hear anybody talk, much less TED. I don't know who this TED guy is, but he's getting around and he's starting to annoy me. People who stand on stage and lecture you and tell you how shitty your life is and how great theirs is because they turned their life around. You haven't. You're an asshole. Thanks for paying me $200 to listen to me talk for an hour. Now go home and shut up. Oh my God, that's not right, is it? That's what happens when TED talks. Who's this guy, Ted? I don't know anybody named Ted at all. I don't think I ever have. Theodore is what Ted is. I don't know any Theodores. The only Theodore I ever knew was the character name on Leave It to Beaver, but they called him Beaver instead of Theodore. They wouldn't even call him Theodore on the show. Ted? No. No. And yet, we all, when we were growing up, we had a teddy bear, a Theodore bear. Why didn't they call it Theodore bear? It was a teddy bear. Teddy talks. I saw the cutest thing in a supermarket was spaghetti. No, I saw a little kid, probably about 4 years old, a little girl, and she was walking around with her teddy bear, and her mother was, you know, put her in the shopping cart and stuff. And she was holding this little 4 year old was holding this teddy bear tightly, and it was her security blanket. And I thought, you know what? That's a good idea. I might get stares if I go to the supermarket. People might stare at me because I'm walking around with a teddy bear and I'm way over 4 years old. But the security would be fantastic. I could talk to my teddy bear, and my teddy bear would talk to me. And that would be my little TED Talks. Oh, don't get me wrong. Oh, don't you get me wrong. You don't know me. You don't know me. There was a point in my life, because I was doing television and radio for most of it, that I wanted to stand up on stage and do motivational speaking. I've talked about this before. I've talked about everything before. I thought, what a wonderful way to make a living. Make believe that I'm successful when I'm really not. And stand on stage and tell people what to do. Your life is shitty. This is how you can turn it around. Have a good day. What a wonderful way to make money. It's a scam and a sham, but it's cool. It's a way of entertaining and at the same time telling people what to do. It's like a fun cult is what it is. Did you listen to Ron yesterday stand on stage and tell us how great life can be? He's amazing. How much did you pay him? $200. You're an idiot. You're an idiot. You're an idiot. You can listen to him on the radio for free. You're an idiot. I wanted to write a book, and I did. I wrote one book. I'm working on another one. I've been working on it for about 20 years. I wrote a book called Shut Up, I'm Walking Down the Aisle. You can buy it if you like. I think it's still on Amazon. It's called Shut Up, I'm Walking Down the Aisle. It's about people who get married. It's about weddings, planning weddings, how stupid they are, and all the strange things that happen, how people become really weird when they're planning a wedding. It was a comedy book. Did okay. But the real reason that I wrote the book was not to inform people about things. That's really not interesting to me. I wanted to do book signings. I don't know why. I don't know why. It was maybe a sexual fantasy that had nothing to do with sex. You ever have one of those? I want to sit at a little table in the middle of a bookstore, of which there are a few left, and sit there at a table in a chair and have people line up to see me. And I would have like a stack of copies of my book. And these people would one by one getting all excited to get to the front of the line to see me. I would say, hi, how are you? And they would say, fine. And that would be the extent of the conversation. And I'd say, would you like me to sign my book for you? And they would say, I don't know. I guess. And I would say to them, what's your name? And they would say, Johnny. They'd all be named Johnny. And I'd say, and then I'd write on the front page of the book, thank you, Johnny. Have a great life, Ron. And then I give it to them and they go, oh, I have a signed autograph in the book from the person that actually wrote the book. And they'd be excited and I wouldn't give a shit. And that would be my sexual fantasy. Well, I never did a book signing because I realized that that is just stupid. So that's off my bucket list now, too. I don't have a bucket list. I'm done. Everything that I wanted to do by now, I would have done. If I didn't do it by now, then it ain't worth doing. And if I'm not even going to get out of a chair to get a glass of water, I'm not going to do anything on a bucket list. I mean, who am I kidding? I'm not going to jump out of an airplane, especially with a parachute. I'm not going to bungee jump. I'm not traveling to third world countries where they can imprison me and put splints under my fingernails. I'm not doing that. I'm not going to go on any amusement park rides at all, ever again. I'm not going to get into relationships that are basically just frustratingly ridiculous to even be in. I'm not doing that anymore. I have no bucket list. I don't know. I don't need. The only thing I'm going to put in a bucket is maybe some water, and I'm going to maybe wash my car someday, but I don't even want to do that. I don't have to wash my car with a bucket because I can drive it to the car wash. I have so much trouble at the car. I got to tell you something. This has nothing to do with anything. Not that anything I've said has anything to do with anything previously. I have terrible trouble at car washes. There's something wrong with me. I can park a car. I can back a car into a space. I'm good at driving. I can drive a car. Don't get me wrong. But somehow, when you have to drive the car into the car wash, they have these this little rail that you have to fit your left tire into. I can't get that right. I can't get it in there. And they even have a car wash employee standing at the door giving me signals like I'm trying to land a 747 at the airport or something. No, you schmuck, the left. No, go to the left, you schmuck. No, a little bit more to the right. Ah, you freaking idiot. I can't do it. I can't get my tire into that little groove rail thing. So I have a very dirty car. When I do go to the car wash, and I go every once in a while, I think once every 6-7 years. Yeah, what do you need a car wash for? Yeah. If it rains outside, leave the car outside. If you don't have a garage, it's an automatic car wash in your driveway. I don't understand what the problem is. I always hope for a real heavy rainstorm where it comes down like in buckets, quote unquote. Nothing comes down in buckets. I mean, it's just, you know, it just rains. But when it's really heavy rain and it's pounding, that's a great way of cleaning your car. Just before it rains, get some soap or some car wash liquid thing and rub it on your car. And then when the storm hits and it rains really hard, that washes your car off. And I mean, like, that's free. That's just, it's basically free. Car wash my ass, right? Wouldn't it be great if they had a people wash? I don't think they do. Basically, for insurance purposes, people could be harmed in a people wash. But if it was constructed just like a car wash, you would just stand in line, and they go, okay, you're next, put your feet in the rail. And you'd sit on a chair that's on a moving platform, and it would bring you through the car wash, and you get all wet and stuff. And things would scrub you for you, you know, like what Oprah does. I don't think Oprah actually takes a shower. I think she just stands there and has her people rub her down. I think that's all that happens. Oprah lives in a mansion. I saw this online once. They had the celebrity homes of these really rich people, these big celebrities, and Oprah's home was one of the pictures, and the damn thing looks like Buckingham Palace. I don't know, whatever. I don't think you need homes that big for any reason at any point in your life, no matter how rich you are. I think at a point it's just like a matter of opulence. I have all this money, I gotta do something with it. I think that's what it is, because nobody needs homes that big. No one needs to be in Buckingham Palace as their home. Not even the queen, not even the king. The queen, sorry, there is no more queen. Not even the king needs to live there. That's too. You know how many bathrooms are in Buckingham Palace? Nah, I don't know either. I'm sure it's more than 20. How many different, like, well, I'm going to take a shit in every bathroom, and I don't have to go to the same bathroom for about 6 months. Well, okay. So anyway, so there's this Oprah palace. Now, if you live in a palace like that, and you have people that do everything for you, I guarantee you that she has people that rub her down and wash her, and she just stands there. I don't think Oprah exercises. I think she has people move her limbs for her up and down for about half an hour a day. I don't think she has sex with Stedman. Never has, never will. She has people that are, you know, that'll jerk her off. I think that's that when you're really rich, that's what happens. That's how you handle these things. I'm not sure, but I'm pretty sure. I have an interesting guest today. I did the television show for approximately, I'd say 15 good years, 20 years. I should have stopped after 15. And it was a variety show, and it was a comedy variety show, very similar to the Letterman Carson kind of thing, but like more of a twist on the comedy end. We did a lot of, we had a lot of fun. There was an event that took place in the area called King Richard's Fair. It was one of these Renaissance fairs. Are you familiar with them? Have you heard of TED Talks about that? And they had all these incredible acts at this Renaissance Fair, and I used to go all the time. We used to publicize it because we were asked to do it, and we did. So we would have all these people from these, we had animal acts and novelty acts and all these kinds of things on the show. And we did it on an annual basis. So there were these two guys, Smee and Blog. They were called the Singing Executioners. This is back in 1990, 1987, 1990, around there, and a little bit further into the future from there. That was a long time ago. Some of you weren't even born yet. One of the guys of the Singing Executioners, Smee or Blog, I don't know which is which, wrote a book. And Alan Olson is his name, but he wrote a book about Renaissance fairs from the inside because he's been doing it forever. He's still doing it, man, still doing it. And I thought, wow, you're still doing Renaissance fairs? And he's probably saying, you're still doing radio and television? So, yeah, okay, both of us are a little weird, I guess. I haven't talked to him in decades and decades and decades, and that's a lot of decades. And today I'm going to talk to him. Looking forward to it. It'll be a little nostalgic for me, but we're also going to learn about the Renaissance Fair thing that just is, it's so popular. It was like the original Comic-Con kind of thing, only with period pieces involved instead of superhuman costumes. Anyway, that interview is coming up right after a commercial break. I think you'll find it fascinating. I know I will. I mean, if you do, that's nice too, but yeah, it'd be kind of fascinating, I'm pretty sure. But before we do that, this break, please.
Sure, I like a good burger. But for me, sometimes the best part of the burger gets left on the grill. That's why I'm headed to Burger Guy to try their new Big Gristle Deluxe. A full half pound of hand-scraped grill-hardened gristle, machine-pressed into a greasy patty, and smothered with Burger Guy's signature something-like-cheese sauce. And for a limited time, it's just $5.99 with a metric ton of fries and keg of soda. Sound good? Yeah, no kidding, huh? Hey, I'll see you at Burger Guy.
For a limited time only at participating Burger Guy restaurants. Please consult with your physician before ingesting reconstituted meat byproducts such as gristle. Burger Guy's something like cheese sauce has not been entirely approved for human consumption by the FDA.
Alan Olson joins us now. He is a performer and an entrepreneur in his own sense. He is with the American Renaissance Festival, or at least was and still is, I guess. You're still performing, I understand, Alan.
Yes, several weekends a year still.
And how far back in history are we going with your involvement in the Renaissance festivals and fairs?
Well, I got started in 77.
Wow.
Festivals themselves started back in 63 in mm-hmm. California.
Wow. And I know that you did this all over the country, or was it regional?
No, I 53 shows all over all over the country that I've worked at.
Wow. I had a television show back in the 80s stretching into the century thing, and I was a guest on the program many times, and always a very colorful, fun thing. And that's what I remember about those interviews in those times. It was just fun. I guess it was a lot more work for you than it was fun for me. But, yeah, that was a good time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we loved being up in New England there. That really was one of our favorite crowds.
Wonderful. So this happens all over the country. Do you find that most people aren't aware that these festivals are even taking place?
They're becoming more and more aware of these things. They're since COVID, they're actually exploding. Yeah. People took the opportunity to come out and get outdoors and have some fun. And once they get to these shows, they come back.
It's quite incredible the extent of the entertainment and the oohs and the ahs that take place. It's an entire day's entertainment, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, you might as well come early because there's plenty to see.
Yeah, and then and it's actually like stepping back in time in a sense. All the foods are reminiscent of that period of time, And what I find fascinating, Alan, is that the crowd, the spectators, actually play a role in it themselves.
Absolutely. It's interactive entertainment. They'll be in your face in the lanes, and they'll be more than happy to bring you up on stage with them, too.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like role-playing from another place in time, well before role-playing became popular with all these conventions and Star Trek and all that kind of stuff. This was actually popular with what you were doing way back.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Wow. I understand that you've taken some of your experiences and you've put them into writing.
Absolutely. I was lucky enough to be, a part of this early on when they were just starting a lot of these shows, and I got to know a lot of the people. I actually cover the advent of 32 festivals in the book, and I have 54 biographies of key mm-hmm. people in all phases of the industry, as well as a book filled with color photographs of these people and posters and things like that.
It was an incredible experience. For those that aren't familiar, jousting on the horseback with the lances, that was a major event that took place. There were costumes and kings and royalty and bar wenches, which I visit frequently on a normal basis. Okay. Acrobats, magicians, court jesters, pirates. I mean, man, it was like it was everything.
Yep, well, it's a safe place for people to come out. If they want to dress up, they can. Otherwise, just come out and have a really good time.
Yeah. And then there's the aspect of the vendors, as most people might be familiar at various types of fairs. But here the vendors actually, again, are playing that role from that time period and presenting some of the most interesting wares that I've seen at anywhere.
Absolutely. Jewelry, glass blowing, leather work, woodworking, yeah. Clothing, shopping is incredible.
Yeah, it really is. That's the major part of it. And then there are those gigantic turkey legs. My God, where do they find turkeys that big?
I don't know, but there's a bunch of them walking around on crutches, I guess.
I suppose so. It's probably some home somewhere. That's amazing. And then the animals. Oh, my God. I mean, there's even been some controversy here and there about it, but the fair made it through all of that as well. The animals were unbelievable, and some of the those acts were kind of amazing.
Yep. You've got a lot of shows have petting zoos. Of course, the jousts are on horseback, and of course, up there in New England, for a while you had live tigers walking through the site.
Yeah, that was kind of freaky, but yet safe. Amazing stuff. When you traveled the country, Alan, I guess you were working with all different facets of it. In other words, not the entire crew didn't go like in the circus from venue to venue. You were working with different people all over the country. Is that how that happened?
Yes, the shows are individually owned, and all of the crafters and performers are individually run. And so basically you just put your own schedule together as far as what shows you can fit into mm-hmm. it.
And this is indeed the time of year when the shows start popping up all over the country. What are some of the more popular ones that are still in existence?
Oh, well, the Minnesota Renaissance Festival is really kind of where it started, east of the mm-hmm. east of the Rockies, but Pennsylvania, New York, Michigan, Kansas City, actually two shows in New York, King Richard's up there in New England, mm-hmm. The Texas Renaissance Festival down in Houston is the Disneyland of festivals.
Really?
And they're all over the country.
Wow.
Maryland is another biggie.
You were in a certain act that we talked about all the time when you were on the TV show, which was a fascinating act. Tell us about that.
It's me and Blog, the singing executioners. Yes, we luckily came up with the idea just as they were opening shows all over the place. And so there weren't that many themed acts at the time. So we really got the opportunity to work a lot of places as well. We We were backstage for the entertainment for the Rolling Stones in St. Paul one time. And down in Arizona, we were the first act to roast Charles Barkley at a celebrity roast and introduce Billy Crystal to take over for us.
That's fantastic. Wow. I mean, just the name of the act itself, you're going to have crowds because it's just so, so bizarre. And yeah, you know, when you guys dressed up, it was pretty scary. I mean, you guys look like the executioners, but at the same time, you would start singing these wonderful satirical songs, and it was just a blast. I just loved that.
Yeah, I designed myself actually as a children's character with a black hood on and a 7-foot axe.
Yes. Everything was 7 foot as far as I could remember. So tell me about the writing that you've been doing here.
Well, back in the 80s, Renaissance festivals were kind of considered to be a sitcom joke.
Mm-hmm.
And by that point, I'd been working them long enough to know that the people that actually built these shows and worked these shows had a lot of other choices in life. Mm-hmm. But they chose the Renaissance festival industry because it allowed you to create your own reality.
Mm-hmm.
There are people with business degrees with, Michael Marzella was a journalist. He turned down a job with USA Today because he was having so much fun being king he preferred to do that.
Wow. You know, for many of them, it was a very short-lived kind of performance bubble that they were in. What usually lasted like August through maybe October, maybe not even. And that was, it's a lot of work for a short period of time, but tons of people would show up.
Yep. Nowadays, you can work from January to December.
Really?
That festivals all year round.
Wow. Okay. All right. So what's the name of the book? Where can I get it?
It's The History of the American Renaissance Festival. For autographed copies, you can go to singingexecutioners.com. There's a button there that you can find the book through that. It's 360 pages. Hardcover, photographic paper. It's a beautiful book. It's a coffee table book, but it's a good history as well.
Perfect. Is there anything on YouTube or on that internet Google thing that where I can reminisce myself and see you guys doing what you do?
Oh, absolutely. We've got video that includes footage of the Barkley roast on singingexecutioners.com.
Oh my God.
And on YouTube, if you search Singing Executioners, you'll find a number of things.
Wow. I got to tell the listening audience, just you got to do this because it'll blow your mind and it's just total fun. It's great. And pick up the book as well. It's The History, Growth, and Lore of the American Renaissance Festival. From an insider's unique perspective, I'm picking that up too. I'll get all your merchandise. What the hell, you know? where will you be next in the near future months here?
Well, I'll be up in Maryland's the weekend of October 21-22, signing books.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be down in North Carolina the following weekend signing books.
Mm-hmm.
I will be at Scarborough Fair performing and signing books next spring.
Wow, cool. Well, keep doing what you do, that's for sure, because it's worth it. And for those that may not have had the experience of one of these fairs, it's do it because you'll understand what we're talking about here. And if you check out the book and go online, take a look, you'll be saying, yeah, I'm going. Hey, Alan, it's been a pleasure speaking to you. Hopefully we'll hook up again in the near future, and keep doing it, babe.
All right. Thank you, Ron. Take care.
Take care. Well, that'll do it for me today. Thanks for being here. You've just been marvelous. I'll be back again the next time a weekday rolls around, which could be pretty soon. So until that time arrives, I wish you peace.